Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Well, you have heard over the years a number of different physician fireside chats. Some of the ones at the top of my mind include Pamela Weibel, Jim Dolly, and our guest today is not a doctor, but she is married to one. She's married to a surgeon, and she is on a mission to help other physicians and understand their path and understand what it's like being married to a physician. She and her husband got married before they started down the medical path, and for 16 years they've struggled, they've triumphed through the MCAT, through medical school, through residency, and fellowships along the way, including a specialty change. They have four kids. And she knows that being married to a physician is not an easy journey. And I know she's going to bring to us some wisdom, talk to us through their journey. So please help me welcome to the show, Laura McElderry from the Married to Doctors podcast. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Well, outside of me stumbling over your name, which hopefully we'll have edited out of this podcast.
No problem.
It's always fun talking to another podcaster, and I thought – part of the reason why I thought you'd be a great fit for this podcast is we haven't heard from a spouse before. Obviously, you know what you're doing somewhat in having another podcast. So you have all kinds of great topics in terms of residencies and supporting a spouse that's a physician, taking care of yourself, and all kinds of different things. But before we get to the podcast, I'd love to hear about this journey, the last 16 years, and what has been going on for you guys. So introduce us to you, and tell us more about you and your journey.
Well, thanks. Where to even begin? It feels like it's been a lifetime, right? When my husband and I met and fell in love, he was probably going to be a math teacher. And shortly after we got married, he decided to take the MCAT. And we just went down a path that I had never expected or planned on going. So we moved for medical school. Having a family was very important to us. We actually have five sons. We had one son born before medical school, two sons born during medical school, and then two sons born during training. And we had a bit of a journey because my husband matched originally into general surgery, and that moved our family from Arkansas, where we had done medical school and where we were from, to Ohio. We did medical school, we did general surgery residency for a few years, and we were under quite a few stresses there. We had had some health problems with one of our kiddos, pretty serious brain tumor and different health issues with him. And through all of this, you know, my husband said, you know what, I can be happy doing something else. I really can. And so he decided to go into pathology, which was much more family friendly. But it wasn't long into pathology when we both kind of looked at each other and knew that that really wasn't his mission in life, and it really wasn't going to allow him to live his true purpose. And so it was a very difficult conversation because by this time we've moved, we've lost time. But we both agreed that he should go back into surgery. And so he left the pathology program, returned to general surgery, which was a little tricky, and then finished up and became a board-certified surgeon. And so a little non-traditional path there. And so I've spent quite a bit of time in the training years. And so I have a lot of experience to draw on from that. And besides, between having the kids and training in three different states, I felt like I would take all these experiences and start just sharing my stories and my advice to some extent, and then reaching out to others and hearing their stories and their input. I found that there wasn't a lot of resources for physician spouses. You know, there's lots out there for doctors. Oh, yeah, talk, you know, listen to the docs, listen to, you know, this podcast or that podcast for the doctors. And so my community is really physician partner based. It's really for the partners and what they're going through.
Well, what a great topic, and one that a lot of physicians could certainly have their spouses check out with Married to Doctors. And so there's so many different things that you mentioned there that I want to dig into. Number one, you're outnumbered. Six guys
Absolutely.
To one. Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's funny. I always laugh. You know, I didn't have a prom date, and it was just, you know, very devastating as a high school kid. And now I can go anywhere with six men anytime I want. And my husband's over 6 foot. My oldest son has hit 6 foot. And so I just feel like, well, now I have an escort anywhere I want to go. And it's kind of a joke to me that I have these handsome men around my life. I love it. I love being a boy mom. It's super fun.
You have a basketball team plus one on the bench. That's something else.
Yeah, so, we had a good time.
So tell me about, I want to go back in time to kind of your background a little bit. This podcast, of course, is focused on finances, and I think this will be helpful to give context to in terms of how two people come together. So I'd love to know, when it comes to money, Laura, how were you brought up? What was money like as a subject in your house as you were growing up?
Oh, that's so funny. So I did not come from money per se. I mean, I never missed a meal. My parents certainly provided for us, but my background is fairly simple. I'm the first grandchild on either side of the family that got a four-year degree from school. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when Josh and I were first engaged, we had a conversation, and I said, you know, the only thing I really remember my parents fighting about is finances. And he was a math major at the time. And I said, you know, if you'll just take care of the books and the numbers, I said, I promise I can make whatever budget you know, just allot me money to buy, you know, for my needs or for kids or for food or whatever, you know, my responsibilities end up being. And I'll deal with whatever the number is. If you'll just keep up with it, I just don't want this to be contentious. And of course, you know, he was in love, and he would tell me anything I wanted to hear. So he was like, yes, of course I'll do that, right? And then life happened, and the budgeting fell to me with his busy schedule in school. And I had to learn more than I probably wanted to about budgeting and finances. And I think it's funny, some people really gravitate towards that sort of thing, and they eat it up and they love it. And I'm like, you know, but some people also like to run for fun, right? There's other people in the world that are like, I'm not running unless I'm being chased up a tree, right? So, you know, it's kind of like that with finances. I think some people are like, there's no way I'm going to sit down and look at these numbers and make a spreadsheet for kicks. You know, there's no way. So it's one of those things that you have to kind of force yourself to do when you need to.
Well, it's kind of like, I often think of things like the dishes, right? Who really likes to do the dishes? No one likes to do the dishes. Who really likes to clean the house, right? I mean, that's something that not a lot of people love, especially, you know, if it's every once in a while, it's not a big deal, right? But the routine and cleaning up after five boys plus one, you know, I'm sure is not the easiest thing. And then finances, I think of the same way, where it's this routine and the habit, you know, every once in a while is easy. But it's the everyday work of it, just like with a relationship, right? You know, the everyday work of it. So as you were growing up, was budgeting something that you had talked about? You know, it sounded like you never had an issue with food, nothing like that. You know, what was kind of your attitude towards money as you were growing up?
I think as I was growing up, my attitude toward money was, it's out there, but it's not mine and will probably never be mine. Honestly, I didn't see myself as someone that would ever be a person with money. And I still don't really see myself that way. I think, you know, we've been in training for so long now It's just hard for me to visualize the idea of what my children will have. You know, even though we have taken a bit of a longer path, you know, my youngest will be starting kindergarten next year. And as my husband is looking at general surgeon contracts now, I see those numbers and I think about his experience as he starts kindergarten and goes through his whole school experience with a father that makes six figures. It still seems very foreign to me, and it takes a little bit of getting used to.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be an adjustment for sure. And what about your husband? You know, how was he brought up, you know, in terms of his financial training, if you will? Was there a big difference between the two of you?
No, I think we both grew up really modestly. So in my husband's case, this is going to blow your mind. He's actually one of nine children. So my family, I grew up with three siblings. So I was one of four. Josh actually grew up one of nine siblings. And his dad is a Spanish teacher, a high school Spanish teacher. Mm. And they just, I don't know, they just made it. Somehow his mom made it work. And so we both kind of grew up, I think, with just this idea of, like, it doesn't take a lot of money to raise a family. And so I think that's one reason we were willing to have a family during school. So many people say, you know, kids cost money and blah, blah, blah. And I think with Josh and I, we kind of looked at each other and we said, well, if our parents did it, so can we. And we wanted children, you know, I mean, obviously we did or we wouldn't have them. So we chose to go ahead and have a family, and it's been a great decision for us personally.
Interesting. So the two of you met in college? Did I catch that right?
Yeah, yeah. So you met at the University of Arkansas.
The University of Arkansas, Razorbacks.
Right. That sounds romantic, right?
I know, right?
And so Wild Hogs.
So do you guys get married right after undergrad or during undergrad? When did you get married? Help me with the timeline here a little bit.
Sure. So I was working on a master's degree. I'm a few years older than Josh. And so I was working on my master's degree, and he was, well, I think he was a junior. But then once he decided to go the med school route, he wanted to get more prerequisites and get a double major. So he ended up, we got married. I was like, oh, he'll be done in a year. And it ended up being 2 years later. And now it's been 16 years later. He's still not done.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow, wow, wow. So it was kind of before he was going to medical school, but after undergrad. Did I capture that right?
Yeah, so we got married in October, and the following August, he took the MCAT. So in under a year, he had decided to at least take the MCAT and just see. You know, we were like, let's see how you do on it. And I think my husband was really unassuming and, you know, didn't know how he would do on it. He did quite well on it. We only applied to one medical school, our state school. We knew that out-of-state schools are much more difficult to get into, mm-hmm. as well as more expensive. So we said, well, we'll apply to, you know, University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences in Little Rock. And he was accepted, and we moved to Little Rock, which was home for him. He was from the Little Rock area. So we moved there and did our 4 years of med school there.
Wow. So you're married now and you have a kiddo in the middle of his medical school journey. So
right.
walk me through your first kiddo. You know, what were going through your minds, you know, thinking about him and his hours and what that was like for you?
Yeah, so first kiddo, we took with us the Little Rock as a little baby. So Josh took the MCAT in August, and that baby was born in November. That's our oldest now. So he went with us to Little Rock, and I knew that I wanted the kids fairly close together. And so we actually had our second son that first year of medical school in February. No, it would have been second year of medical school, I guess. Wait, now I'm getting all mixed up. Does it matter? We had another child. It was medical school and there were babies, right? And so, yeah, we had our second little boy. And then a little bit more of a surprise came number three. So those first three were all born very close together. The first two are 15 months apart, and then 21 months later, the third one was born. So we had three boys by the time we were going through the match and preparing to move for residency.
So talk me through that time financially, right? Like he's in medical school, not earning anything. Were you working? Like, well, having all these babies and everything? Like, what was happening? How were you guys making it?
Yeah, I think financially, you know, we probably weren't making it. We were just hanging in there. So I had been teaching before we left for Little Rock, and my thought had been, oh, I'll get to Little Rock and I'll find a teaching job. And that didn't really happen. I wasn't finding a job that would work. And then I found out that I was pregnant, and it, you know, I started thinking about, well, this might be complicated if I take a job and then have to take maternity leave. And with Josh's schedule, it was like, well, gee, by the time we pay for some childcare for me to go to work, you know, we've kind of like, we haven't really come out ahead, you know, unfortunately, on a teacher salary in Arkansas. And so we just decided to kind of grin and bear it. We lived off savings. We scraped together money. We qualified for some government assistance and just kind of lived off loans and love.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So talk to me through that. You know, was that something stressful? What were those times like? Can you remember any specific time that was kind of a low point during that for you guys?
Oh, absolutely. So I think the lowest point for me was, this was pre-Obamacare and that sort of thing, and I was really worried about health insurance. And one of the reasons I had wanted so badly to get a teaching job was I felt strongly that we should have health insurance, that was the responsible thing to do, and that we needed health insurance. I didn't really want to use Medicaid unless we absolutely needed to. So we had put off that decision for a while and had been paying for private health insurance out of savings and whatnot. And time went on, and I didn't get the teaching job. And then our second son was diagnosed with a brain tumor during third year of medical school. So I had like a 6-month-old. I had a 4-year-old, which, by the way, he was really struggling with his speech and was needing speech therapy. And now the middle boy was, you know, it was not good. He was falling a lot. He was having some pretty serious issues. And so he had to undergo, obviously, a surgery to remove this racquetball-sized tumor. Mm. And thank God for Medicaid. And I just remember thinking, had I gotten a teaching job that I so desperately thought I needed, I would have been trying to balance my work. I would have been trying to, you know, pay 20% of all these medical bills until we reach some crazy deductible or something. And as it was, we were well taken care of. We were able to get, once we got in the system, it was a little bit tricky getting someone to give your son an MRI when you don't have insurance, but that's a different story. But once we got in the system and we were there, very well taken care of, and I consider that a huge blessing in our lives that we were able to get my son not only the care he needed during the time that he was in the hospital, but the following, like the therapy and all of that he needed during medical school. I've often thought, you know, what if things had gone differently? How would that have played out? You know, would Josh have quit medical school to, you know, take a job to pay off medical debt? I don't know. You know, I don't know how that would have played out. So I'm very thankful for the resources, and despite all the problems and issues that our system, quote-unquote system, has, I'm thankful for being a recipient when we needed it most.
And how's that kiddo doing now? Everything okay there?
Yeah, so he's 13, and he's going to be at a track meet today, so he's doing quite well.
All right, awesome. Well, we'll zip back to the past here. So you're out of medical school. You get through this situation where we're at a low, and how are we going to make it? And somehow, some way, you make it through. And you're in residency now, or he's in residency, and you're supporting him through the residency. And now you're making a little bit of money now. So
yeah, we feel like we're living high on the hog now. You know, 40-something thousand a year. We're like, woo, this definitely beats a student loan check twice a year. Yeah.
And so at this particular point, like how much, if you don't mind me asking, if you just want to round it, that would be great. But how much in student loans did you all have by this point?
That's a good question. I don't know exactly how much we had when we went to residency. I can tell you that when we finished 7 years of residency, and remember, like part of that was in a pathology residency, but when we finished 7 years of residency, we had $418,000 in student debt. Mm. Yeah. Family of seven.
Oh, yeah. Well, and how were you, so going into residency, like how were you thinking and planning for that, knowing that maybe you had $250,000 or $300,000 at the time or something? Like how were you planning for that? For the future, where you just say, we'll just take care of it another day. You know, what were those conversations like between the two of you?
I think we really felt the burden of it. And I think we thought about different things that we could maybe do. But in our particular family situation, you know, nothing really made sense. We had these three little kids. If I were to take a job, by the time you're paying childcare for three kids, because the youngest was only in half day kindergarten.
Yeah.
You know, it just never, the numbers really never played in our favor. Oh, we could start trying to pay some of this back at this point. But remember, salaries only, I don't remember what it was. I believe it was in the $40,000 range that first year. It might have been a little bit higher than that. And so it's like, okay, how are we going to, you know, live off? So our main thing was, let's just not get in more debt. Whatever you make as an intern, whatever you make as a resident, that's what we're going to live on. And so we just budgeted it and found a place we could rent and were willing to not get into more debt. What we did well was not have a lot of consumer debt, not have a lot of extra debts. And so then when he did go into practice, because he actually practiced for a couple years before the fellowship that he's currently in, you know, we saw a bunch of money and we were like, whoa, that's way more than we need to live on. Clearly we've proven we can live on much less. And so then we were able to start paying down our debt really rapidly.
Well, that's awesome. And was there, in this journey that you guys have had, was there ever been like a mistake you made that you could point back and tell someone else, don't do that? You know, what's something that if you could go back and erase it, some sort of financial mistake that the two of you made, what would that be?
So that's an interesting question. I really think what I would say is when you take your first attending job, remember that a lot of them don't work out. And that's not a pleasant thing to hear, and it's not what you want to hear. It's certainly not what I wanted to hear. It was really a rock-bottom moment when we realized that that job wasn't going to be our forever job. Because, you know, we're a little bit older, our kids are a little bit older, we're definitely in the mood to settle down at this point and get them through school. And when we realized that wouldn't be a forever job, it was disappointing to me for a couple of reasons, but one of them was that I had really tackled our student loan. You know, like I said, we had like $418,000 in debt. And yeah, I was like, this is not going to be us. We're getting rid of this stuff. We don't, you know, I do not want to be paying interest on this. And so while I did build some savings and have a small nest egg, it was way too small. And so then when the job didn't work out, you know, we could have turned around and gotten another job. We could have actually kept that job, but I don't think it would have been a good fit for us. So, you know, as when my husband decided to do a fellowship, I was like, you know, that was a difficult conversation for a couple of reasons, obviously. But one of them was the financial aspect. It was like, well, crap, we could have had plenty of money and that year could have been playing, you know, pretty cush, but I didn't have too much in the bank. I mean, we had enough that we've been fine. But I would have played my cards differently. I wouldn't have been quite so quick to play down that student debt. I would have had a bigger nest egg. So I would, I guess my advice would be those first few years as an attending to, yes, make payments, but don't get so zealous in making payments that you don't build in a cushion in case you have a job that you're not loving and you want to take time off to go look for a different one, or if, you know, I don't know, you have some unforeseen experience. I just wish we had had a bigger nest egg, I guess.
I think that's a great piece of advice. The other thing that I often tell people, and I'm curious to get your feedback on this with working with many physicians that are friends and whatnot, what about buying the first house? I usually suggest to people, because of this very instance, that you might change your mind 6 months to a year down the road. Don't buy your first house when you're a resident, and don't buy it when you start being an attending. What is your experience and feedback on your situation as well as seeing other physicians?
Oh, man. So this is going to vary so much, you know. Everyone has a different story. Everyone has a different situation, where they're living, why they think they'll stay there forever, where their family's located, how much money they have, is their spouse working? I mean, it's just such a hard question to answer. Yeah. Our story was, when we went for pathology residency, so when we gave up the surgical spot and chose to go into pathology, we were moving back home. We did that in Little Rock. Mm. It's where my husband was from. It was near family. There were plenty of pathology jobs available for after residency. I found a teaching job as well. So when we went back for residency, at that point I had my teacher salary plus his residency salary. So, you know, that added up to like a grand total of like 70, 80 something thousand a year. And we were rich, you know, in our minds. And so we're like, wow, we're going to buy a house. And so we did. Hmm. But as I mentioned, it wasn't too long before we realized that he should, in fact, be a surgeon. And so we actually still own that house. So we bought that house in 2010. So 8 years later, we still own that house. We've been very fortunate to have renters that have continually managed to pay the mortgage on it. And other than, you know, a little tornado that took out a tree that we had to deal with, you know, we haven't had a lot of issues with that home. You know, in hindsight, I kind of wish we didn't own the thing, but so far it hasn't been a super bad decision for us because we were able to sell it. I mean, not sell it, but to rent it out.
In hindsight, that sounds like that is something that if you could take it back, that you would. But it is what it is now.
Well, I mean, yeah, but no one has hindsight when they're making decisions. But, yeah, I probably wouldn't have bought a house. But the thought was we're going to live here forever. So when we bought the house, we weren't planning on leaving Little Rock.
Right.
Yeah.
But things change. Times change.
Oh, yeah, well, that's life, you know.
Well, let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. Big announcement here. Have you ever wanted to open your own cash-based insurance-free practice? If the answer is yes, then I invite you to attend a special workshop led by my friend Dr. Mike Wu-Ming, who was on the podcast in late 2017. He is a physician entrepreneur. He has been quietly teaching physicians a special type of medical practice with cash pay only. You don't have to deal with insurance anymore. He calls them paradise practices. And it's not only wildly popular for patients, but for the physician owners, because it gives you freedom to work less while making more. Mike and his team, he's been doing this himself. And you can learn his systems, how to pay these cash pay practices. And so he wants to give you, my friends, a special discount when you attend his exclusive workshop. So if this resonates with you, if this is something that you want to look into, check out this link, paradisepracticeworkshop.com/freedom. And you're going to get $100 off your registration. Make sure to go to paradisepracticeworkshop.com. .com/freedom and get $100 off your registration. Go there now.
So you've gone through this journey. You've gone through a couple of different residency programs and exposures to pathology as well as to general surgery. What do you think, you know, are some of the lessons of being a spouse of a doctor that you would like to pass on to the physicians that are listening to this podcast?
Huh, that is the whole reason I started my podcast, right? It's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. Because on one hand, I want to tell the physician spouses, you know, love your spouse, be supportive to your spouse. Your spouse is under a lot of stress and blah, blah, blah. But the flip side of that coin is there's a whole lot of stress going on the home front. And it's really important for the physicians to recognize that even though the stress is different and the type of tired that your spouse may feel is different, it's not greater than or less than. It's just different. And it's just really important that, you know, you can really start to feel the tension and feel like your lives are so different that they can start branching different directions, and it's easy to lose connection. And I feel like if you don't intentionally turn back toward your spouse, that, you know, your marriage may start going downhill. And the only way I have found to nurture my marriage is to give the benefit of the doubt and exercise some patience and empathy, you know. So, yeah, he's probably not going to meet my needs all the time, right? He's in residency. He doesn't have the time to do that. And I may feel like I'm being put out a little bit. How do I choose to think about that? Do I think, well, my husband's a jerk and he doesn't want to spend time with me? Or do I give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, he probably would like a date night as much as I would, and it's just not going to happen this weekend, and that sucks. But, you know, what can we maybe do instead of an official date night? You know, how can I still, like, show up in our relationship in a kind way?
Hmm. What about, and you guys have had to live on a tight budget with five boys, five growing boys that now some of them are teenagers, eating you out of house and home, I'm sure. What, as you think about managing your finances, in terms of for a physician to talk to their spouse, you know, I find that often one tends to be more financially minded than another. Can you walk us through how do you think would be good ways to approach finances, particularly if maybe someone that's not financially minded on the other side?
Yeah, so I think if one person gravitates towards it, then be happy that somebody wants to deal with it, right? Like in our case, to be honest, neither one of us really wanted to deal with the budget, but it fell to me, and that's been fine. My husband is a really good team player. So when I told him, you know, like, we have X amount of dollars for the week, and you really don't spend any money this week unless you, like, it's absolutely necessary. And he's really good at that. I think a lot of that, you know, comes from our background. If you don't grow up spending money, then you don't feel deprived because you really haven't changed your spending habits. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's just a matter of, you know, someone can take the lead on it. Some couples, you know, they both want to have a say-so. You know, there is a lot of variety in this, especially if both spouses are working and earning substantial incomes. I think the conversation becomes a little more complicated and nuanced depending on what their needs are. But at the end of the day, it still comes down, in my opinion, to just sitting at a table with some paper and pencil and figuring out where the money's going and what your intentions are.
Well, I know for me and my lovely, beautiful wife, I'm the numbers-oriented guy, and she's someone that's not numbers-oriented. And it can be challenging, you know, trying to bridge that gap where she has so many awesome and amazing, lovely, beautiful qualities, but looking at the numbers is hard for her. And so it's something that we've been working on together in our relationship. And I really appreciate so many things about my wife. But approaching that conversation sometimes can be really hard, you know. So any thoughts on being the wife of a physician in terms of, do you schedule time? You know, how do you do that? What does that look like? How are you guys navigating the conversation piece?
Yeah, so I think having open communication, the more often you talk about it, the less awkward it is. If you haven't talked about money in months and all of a sudden one of you goes to the other one and says, hey, we need to talk, and it's about money, you know, it's just kind of a wet blanket from the beginning, right? So having more frequent conversations, I think, helps. Checking in with each other often on those short-term day-to-day expenses and weekly, monthly expenses. And then also, you know, deciding what's important to you as a couple long-term. You know, what do you want out of life? Is owning a home important? Is owning land important? Is being out of debt important? Are you the type of person that when you have debt, you just feel it on your shoulders and your muscles start getting tight? Or are you like, you know what, I feel like debt is kind of how the system's designed, and I feel pretty darn comfortable with the amount of debt we have. And, you know, I'm fine carrying this balance as long as we, you know, do X, Y, or Z. So kind of deciding where you want to be in the big picture can help the everyday-to-day expenses. And then recognizing that you're not going to be the same, and that's okay. Like, if one partner really values, a certain brand of deodorant or something, and they're like, no, but this really is important to me, then maybe you should be like, okay, fine, you can have the extra 20 cents. Get the deodorant. I mean, like, little things, you know, like, don't get in fights over the little things. It's just so not worth it, you know. It's not worth it.
Well, and often if you look back in the grand scheme of things, how important was that little thing?
Right.
One of the other things that I see, which maybe will be hard for you to speak to in your particular case, is the two-physician household. And I see some physician females in particular that struggle with the thought of wanting to stay home with the kids versus working. And in many cases, there's a large student loan burden that comes across with that. And I think of even situations where maybe the spouse isn't a physician, but they're making good money doing what they're doing. And they're not used to living off of one income. And so then they reduce to one income and things become financially stressful. In your guys' situation, you've started with nothing, right? You weren't making any money,
yeah,
really, in medical school, and you've built up to that, which I think, in my opinion, really leads to some good habits. But when you're used to making a lot of money and now you're introducing kids into the picture, you're having to pull back on that.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that situation, Laura, in terms of what you've seen from other physicians and what works and doesn't work in those kind of situations?
Yeah, so I feel like this is another difficult topic that really has a lot of different issues at play. You know, the female in the partnership is obviously the one that's going to go through pregnancy and going to deliver the baby and has the primary role of nurturing that baby while it's tiny. That's just biologically kind of how things go. It is a very big deal for a woman who has worked to make herself a physician. I can only imagine. I mean, I can't speak for them because I'm not a female physician. I am a female teacher, and a lot of people might think, oh, well, teaching, that's easy to give up. No, no, it's not. You know why? I loved teaching. I was in my element. I loved the classroom. I loved those kids. I was rocking it. I might not have been paid a lot of money, but I was a good teacher. And so giving that up was difficult. And I can imagine giving up, you know, practicing medicine even for the time of maternity leave is a difficult choice. And so, again, I think it's this idea of turning towards your spouse, not away from them. You know, don't resent the husband because he's not the one having the pregnancy and whatnot. And don't resent, you know, just don't resent each other and try to keep the contention down and being honest about what you want. You know, it's different. Some women have a baby and they suddenly their desires change. They do want that time at home. They are willing to give up a salary. They are willing to let some of their previous thing, you know, ambitions go for a while. Other women are like, no way. I'm perfectly content at 6 weeks coming back to work. I can't wait. I'm there. You know, And so that's just, you know, you can't answer that for everyone. It's a very personal decision. And I don't think it's necessarily like, oh, this is right and this is how you should do it and that's the wrong way to do it. I think it's just figuring out what you want and what works for you and your spouse and then not giving a flip about what the rest of the world is doing.
Right.
You know, I mean, when Josh and I decided to have kids and didn't have any money and, you know, some people would be like, I would never bring kids into this world without more financial stability. Okay, don't. No one's asking
right.
you to. You know, no yeah. one's asking you to. But at the same time, if we choose to do that, then we take ownership of that. We do the absolute best that we can with it. And then the consequences come. And I think it's just more important that we stand by our choices and honor our own choices and are honest with our partners and what we want. And I think a lot of different types of marriages can be successful. They just all take work, no matter what you choose. They're all going to take work.
Amen to that. Well, let's segue now. I'd love to hear more about, real briefly, kind of the show, Married to Doctors, your podcast, and maybe a favorite episode or two that you have on it.
Sure. So the Married to Doctors podcast is so fun. It's been a passion project for me, and I've really enjoyed it. I've met lots of wonderful people. It's been so fun to put together. There's three main things I really wanted to do. You know, one was build community because I didn't find a lot of resources for physician spouses. The second thing I really wanted to do was share each other's stories. You know, I have my stories, and they are what they are. But like I was just saying, like so many people have so many different experiences. And really the only thing we have in common is the fact that we happen to be married to a physician. But bringing all these different stories and kind of showing the different insights and ways that we live during the training years and into practice, I find fascinating and interesting. I enjoy hearing people's stories. And then the third reason for starting the podcast was to kind of explore solutions with experts. So I like to have a lot of therapists, experts in relationships and things like that come on the show and just share with us some tips and tricks on how we can navigate, you know, the medical world as well as our marriages.
All right, everyone, you heard it. So get your spouse on it. Check it out yourselves. You may pick up a few things that can help you navigate your relationship. I often say one of the most expensive things that we can do to ourselves to set back retirement is to get divorced. So make sure to check out this podcast. Keep our relationship strong. And even if it's a trick or two you pick up every time, I think that is just as important as your financial life, because you not only have the financial aspect, you have the emotional, the spiritual, and perhaps kids involved with it. So I personally can't emphasize enough how important I think that is. Laura, any closing thoughts?
No, that's about it. If you just want to listen to one episode, if you listen to episode 10, that's called Finding My Voice as a Doctor's Wife, that's more about me and my background, and that's been one that's really popular. You might want to just start there, episode 10. Otherwise, any of them that you find interesting, I hope you'll enjoy it, and I really appreciate you having me on your show. This has been really fun to talk about, go down memory lane with you a little bit.
Awesome. Well, I love how open and vulnerable you were through the conversation. I encourage everyone to check out her podcast, marriedtodoctors.com, all spelled out. So DOCTORS.com, marriedtodoctors.com. Well, there you go, my friends. That's all that we have for today. Would love to hear from you and hear your story, just like Laura shared with us today, theirs. Make sure to contact me, Dave, at drfreedompodcast.com or on my website, www.drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. And remember, my friends, make sure to slash your debt, slash your taxes, so you too can live a liberated lifestyle.
Well, there was the show. Hope you loved it. And of course, we want to make sure to remember that right now is the time. If you are confused about this tax stuff, you want the latest copy of the tax reduction prescription and that calculator I was talking about in January, there's no better time to grab that than right now. Text less taxes, LESSTAXES, to 44222. Again, that's all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES. SSTAXES. Thank you again so much for listening. Blessings to you. Have a good one.